just a single. Good afternoon or early evening. I'm going to call this conference committee on Senate File 1589 to order, and it's about 10 minutes after 5 on Thursday, May 2nd, 2013. We don't have a quorum present presently, but we would hope to by not too long from now. Chairman Murphy, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Not that you have to be welcomed, but since I called it in, I need to do that, I guess. And I look forward today to eventually to finalizing the budget with the goals that we have. But first of all, I think we should probably introduce ourselves. And I think after we do that, we're going to probably look at some change items on the spreadsheet, maybe do some side-by-sides, maybe a little discussion, and then adjourn at your advice. So with that, would you start your introductions and then introduce Jerry and your side of the table, and we'll work our way down there.
Oh, I thought each person could do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that. No, that's for sure.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
In fact, I've prepared a few pages. I'm Representative Mary Murphy, and this is my third year working with state government. So I don't have a long history with state government, but I've been at the legislature. This is my 37th year. And I've been in the majority and I've been in the minority. After a very long time, I became a chair. And I always approached being chair with a plan and established goals and principles. And that continued this year. And from establishing group goals with input from all the stakeholders, we built a bill. And every meeting added to the building. We started with nothing except our natural resources, which were our people, the committee members. We established the goals together and principles. I reached out by asking for a request for information, and many people in this room answered the request for information. And from that document, which they presented, I look at almost every day somebody's answers to the request for information. We built the bill that answered our goals and principles and met the target and was balanced. And we come today, and we're going to learn that our bill isn't a whole lot different from your bill. One of the things that I've learned to do while I've been here at the legislature is work with people, listen to people, and try to meet the needs that they present to me. One of the things I really hate, though, is to be called out of a session, to be told, gee, we like the Senate's proposal a lot better than yours, and this is what we need. That sometimes, especially if it's a bill on the floor that I'm really interested in, kind of irritates me. I think that if people want to give messages to me, it's good to put it in writing so I can put it in my packet. And when I'm ready to consider the matters that they are addressing, then I have it in writing and I can remember the person's voice and all that kind of stuff. and I can think positively about their need. I try not to discount anybody or anyone's problem, but I sometimes don't receive it with an automatic, yes, I can help you, on my tip of my tongue, because I am a person that has to think about things before I react. And sometimes I like one or two different options. Discussion is always good. Listening is always good. Reaching consensus is good.
Very good.
I don't believe in the process of playing games. Our goals, I think, are the same. We have to come out with a bill in a week that we both can take back to our bodies and say we won. Because if we win, the people of Minnesota win. Our accounts people win. The workers of Minnesota win. And the citizens can relax and go about their daily business for the next 2 years. In my spare time, I like to go to the ocean. And I don't know when that's going to happen. But maybe June.
God's got me before that.
Maybe June. But can't go to the ocean until my work is done. And my work is all of ours work. And Mr. Chair, I commit to you my cooperation and my attention for the next, this week and the rest of next week.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and you and I have worked together before, so I have no doubt that what you say is exactly right. I think I'll probably introduce myself a little bit right now. I'm Senator Tom Saxog, and I represent a chunk of northern Minnesota. Although until redistricting, my district was two-thirds larger than it is right now. I used to have Lake of the Woods and International Falls and most of Itasca County and all of Aiken County, which happened to have the north half of Mille Lacs Lake. And with the outcome of redistricting, I have two regional centers in northern Minnesota, the Grand Rapids area and the Bemidji area, as well as Walker with the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. It's a great district, and I've enjoyed both of those districts. As far as state government finance, I hadn't been on state government finance for a number of years, but it was the first division that I was on, and it was chaired by Senator Jane Ranum, who was a very good chair, and it wasn't because of her that I ended up on the Education Committee instead of on State Government Finance. But it's a very important committee, and it includes Veterans Affairs, which is also very important, as we know, in the state of Minnesota. Two basic issues that will probably overshadow most everything else, and that's how are we going to finance the legislative branch and the executive branch. And with that as our goal, I think we're going to go around and ask the committee. We'll start with Senator Bobby Joe Champion and go down the table, and then Chairman Murphy, do the same thing on your side.
Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, chairs. I so appreciate it, and I'm happy to be on the conference committee. It's my first time being on the State Department's committee. I represent Legislative District 59. This is the seat that Senator Higgins had. In fact, I spoke to her briefly earlier today. And most people think my district is just North Minneapolis. It includes North Minneapolis, but it also includes the North Loop, which is also known as the Warehouse District, over half of downtown Minneapolis, as well as Bryn Mawr. And it's a great, diverse district, and I enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to listening and also being a part of the rich discussion to help move Minnesota forward.
Hi, I'm Senator Chris Eaton. I came into the Senate in 2011 when we lost my dear friend Linda Scheid. And I represent Brooklyn Center in the southern part of Brooklyn Park, south of 85th. I was on my one session last time was in the minority. I was on the non-financial part of this committee and state and local government. This is the first time I've been on a conference committee. I'm a pretty new senator.
Thanks, Chris.
Good evening. I'm Melissa Franzen. I represent Senate District 49, which is all of Edina, West Bloomington, and then portions of Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, east of 494. And I'm newer than Senator Chris Eaton. I'm a freshman here at the Senate, and this is one of two conference committees that I've been appointed to, so I'll be running to across the hall to HHS, so I apologize for that. We were a little delayed with session today, so they kind of overlapped tonight, but I'm excited to be here and learn about the process and work to have a good package here to vote on later in the session.
Hello, I'm Kevin Lundeen. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee.
And good evening. I'm Stephanie James. I'm the counsel for the committee.
And Chair Murphy, I think we'll ask these four people to introduce themselves too. They're my staff. Yeah.
Mitch Berger, I'm the administrator for Senator Saxon.
I'm Lesley.
My name is
Ryan Majerus.
I'm Senator
Ritchie.
I work for Senator
Saxon
as well.
There you go. That's the team.
I'm Representative Jerry Newton. I represent Coon Rapids, Blaine, and a portion of Spring Lake Park. This is my second term, non-consecutive. I came in with Senator Champion a few years ago. We sat close to each other. My background really is I'm a retired career military, and so my main interest in this committee has been military affairs. But also, after I retired from the military, I ran a small business for 20 years. I was on the school board and city council for, I guess, a total of 12 years. But this is new to me. State government is a new area, and I'm really interested in enjoying the learning process.
I'm Connie Bernardi, and I'm a freshman, but a four-term non-consecutive at the same time, by choice. And I, first time I've served on state government finance, my first conference committee I've been on, because this is my first time in the majority. I appreciate serving on Chair Murphy's committee because she has a reputation of running a very good committee and building consensus, so I've been watching her in action, and I appreciate your leadership, and I'm looking forward to how you guys work together and create a great bill for Minnesota. Thank you.
And hi, I'm Helen Roberts. I'm the House Fiscal Analyst.
I'm Mark Shepard from the House Research Department.
And Jim Cleary from the House Research Department.
I'm Bryn House, I'm House DFL Conference Research.
I'm Jenny Nash of the
Committee of the State on Health. Evelyn Melander, I'm the CLA.
I'm Kelly, I'm Paige.
Very, very well. So should I ask Kevin Lundeen, our fiscal analyst, to go over the change items? Could I do that? We can have whoever should be doing that. That'd be great.
I think they talked and
did
they have it worked out.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Ms. Roberts and I did talk, and we'll kind of go back and forth on the different proposals. We'll actually...
Perfect.
be working from the change item spreadsheet in your book. I think that might be the first spreadsheet in there. And the first item on the spreadsheet is...
And before you start, Kevin, any questions anybody has as we go along, you know, I think we can deal with them. Chair, does that sound okay? Okay. All right, thanks, Kevin. Keep going.
Okay, the first item on the spreadsheet is dealing with the legislature, and we have the Senate, the House, and the LCC. I think generally between the House and the Senate, I think the Senate increased those budgets by around 9%, and the House gave a 7% increase to them. There's one exception on the Senate side, the Office of the Legislative Auditor. The Senate did give a larger increase, about a 14% increase there.
I don't need it, but I need it.
And then the other item is both bills contain the repeal of the Sunset Commission. And I think we just let the money drop to the bottom line, whereas the House has language in there that transferred that money to the Office of the Legislative Auditor.
Members, the next office is the Office of the Governor, and I should point out on line 14 for the House position, you'll see what's noted as a base adjustment, and the House bill and the target that was set for the House had a 1% base adjustment for all of the agencies on their general fund compensation base. So throughout the spreadsheet, you're going to see that as one of the differences. And those differences, if you total them up, are just under $5.3 million. So that's the first difference, and I'll let Mr. Lundin explain the Senate position.
The next item there is an increase in the office support limit. Both of the bills have a rider in there that limits the amount of money that the governor can get from other state agencies to provide support to his office. And the House has $720,000 in there a year that is the limit for support. And that was the limit that we had in 2 years ago. The Senate has increased that by $30,000 a year up to $750,000.
Mr. Lundin and Ms. Roberts, just for the record and the tapes, could you tell us what your target was so that when we talk about the Senate being different and the House being different, that people will conclude that we had different targets?
Okay. If you want to turn to the last page of the spreadsheet, down on line 215, you can see the amount of spending that was in each of the bills, including the governor's bill. And so the Senate added on top of the base, we had $26,856,000 over the base, bringing the total spending up to $922,224,000.
And the House had a target that was $26 million over the base, so the total net spending was $921,368,000. So the difference between the two is $856,000. And we should also note that you do have the more detailed spreadsheet in your books that have the actual base and appropriation numbers. We're focusing on the changes just to be a little briefer.
Thank you.
So everybody's on the change items, aren't you? Because I wasn't to start out with, so we'll make sure everybody else is. Okay.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Members, back on page 1 on line 19, the next difference is under the Attorney General's office. And again, you'll see here that the House has a base adjustment for the Attorney General, an increase of $476,000 for the biennium, and the Senate funding that would be at the base level. Next, we'll move to the Secretary of State's office. The first difference, again, is the base adjustment in the House side. The next difference is on the funding to replace the federal HABA funds. The House provided $1 million from the general fund to replace those funds, and the Senate has $500,000. And I believe we are identical on the rest of the positions for the Secretary of State. For the state auditor, I think what we want to first say is that throughout the spreadsheet, you're going to see a lot of lines that refer to the state auditor on both on the appropriation section and the revenue section. And it looks like there's a lot of difference, but it's really a policy decision that the committee would make on whether or not to continue the existing funding where the office is funded primarily or through the general fund. The House adopted the auditor's request of moving much of her activity up into an enterprise fund. So these change numbers reflect those decisions, but the real difference to the target, if you look on line 34, in terms of the general fund target, all of the moving back and forth and the revenue offsets are neutral to the target. The real difference is this staff retention item where the House provided $83,000 in funding from the general fund. But I think what's important to know is it's really a policy decision. That's the difference.
Then if we move down under the general fund on line 38, both of the bills include language dealing with a rewrite of the small cities and towns accounting system. And there's just a difference in numbers. I think the language is a little bit different, and the Senate language kind of tightened things up a little bit. So that's basically why we have $250,000 in there versus the House having the $310,000 for the biennium. And then on line 39, that's dealing with the audit practice enterprise where the dollars will flow into that special revenue fund. Moving down to line 42, the difference there on line 43 is the base adjustment again that the House included. We're identical on the increase in the budget. And then turning over to the next page, administrative hearings, the difference there is the base adjustment. Both bills contain the two deficiencies that were requested. Moving down to line 53, the Senate just provided the base budget, and the House has the base adjustment increase in there again. Line 56, we have the Office of Enterprise Technology, and the House included the base adjustment, which the Senate didn't. The savings there that were included in the governor's bill were picked up by both the House and Senate. And then moving down to the special revenue items, the Senate did include the e-government public-private partnership. This was an initiative of the governor's. The House did not include that. And then on line 65, there was a request from the Office of Enterprise Technology for some cash flow assistance dealing with the IT consolidation. And so there's a rider in the bill that gives the office the authority from MMB to borrow up to $110 million for the biennium, and they then have to pay this back within the biennium. So there is no cost to the bottom line for this, since it will be borrowed and paid back before the end of the biennium.
Moving on to the Department of Administration, there is a net difference between the House and Senate of $489,000. The first difference is the base adjustment again on line 68. And then after that, you'll see that both the House and Senate funded the governor's request on several items: the lean expansion, the smart expansion, the internal audit function, and included the transfer, so a reduction for the transfer of the EQB. Both the House and Senate have $30,000 in one-time money for the Nellie Stone Johnson bust. And then on line 75, there's a very small difference of $6,000 between the House and Senate on the public TV increase. And we think that was just a matter of when we put the numbers in, they were still in motion. Both the House and Senate have a increase for AMPRS. The House position is $306,000 over the biennium that would go into the base. And then the Senate position is $500,000 one-time increase. On line 77, you'll see the Senate has a one-time increase for Minnesota Public Radio of $500,000. And then finally, on line 78, both the House and Senate have an additional ongoing increase for Minnesota Public Radio of $120,000 per year. Moving down to Minnesota Management and Budget, on line 82, there's, again, the House has a base adjustment in for $386,000 for the biennium. For the other initiatives, excluding the Compensation Council, but for the governor's initiatives, it looks like there is a lot of difference here, but it was a difference in approach in that the Senate specified certain amounts of funding for the governor's requested initiatives and the riders, but did not fund the enterprise talent management system. Whereas the House provided a reduced level of funding, reduced the overall request from the governor by $4.1 million, but did not specify where the money had to be spent other than a specification that money had to be spent for the $4.5 million had to be used for the budget system. But otherwise was given them flexibility on how to use the funding. So the real dollar difference between the two positions is really $100,000.
Okay, and then the next item on line 88 is dealing with the Compensation Council recommendations. Mm-hmm. And we have a separate article that was included in the Senate bill dealing with this. But we did put in $2.5 million into the bill. And this covers the general fund costs of the Compensation Council recs for the executive branch and the constitutional officers. It does not include anything for legislative salary increases. And we also have a compensation study that's included in Article 7 of our bill. And of that $2.5 million, $200,000 is going for that study. And then I should also note, we do have language in there that once the Compensation Council recs are taken care of, if there's any money left of this $2.5 million, the Commissioner of MMB has authority to transfer that to agencies as a base adjustment, similar to what the House did for compensation costs and kind of a supplement for the contracts.
What line are you on, please?
This is all in line 88.
Okay.
The $2.5 million. There's rider language in the bill that kind of addresses all that I was talking about.
Okay. Moving on to line 90, this is a House position that was added as an amendment to the bill in Ways and Means Committee. There's $300,000 that's provided to compensate employees who were denied benefit cover or dependent benefit coverage when the CGIP dependent audit was done, but these are employees that were really eligible for this, but for various reasons their paperwork wasn't completed, or I think there's various stories. And the way the amendment was designed was at least intended to be a neutral cost to the bill. So there's a $300,000 open general fund appropriation showing here, but we offset it by some reductions to the agencies that show up later in the spreadsheet. Moving on to page 3, for the Department of Revenue, again, the difference here, and this is a $3.1 million difference, is solely due to the base adjustment and the House side. And otherwise, both the House and Senate accepted the governor's recommendations for a overall reduction to the budget due to the tax system savings. There's $400,000 on each side for the taxpayer assistance grants, and that's an increase over base funding. And then a $448,000 savings by requiring electronic wage levy payments and disclosures. And finally, both the House and Senate have the $300,000 in one-time money for property tax technical grants. And the next two items are the gaming agencies. And just for the House members, these accounts were not in the House committee as we put our bill together, but they've been moved into this conference committee, and the two differences, again, for the Gambling Control Board on line 101, it's the base adjustment, and then also for the Minnesota Racing Commission on line 104, the House, again, has the base adjustment. And I think the next set of smaller agencies from the Amateur Sports Commission and the councils, on the House side, the numbers that you're going to see again are representing this, the base adjustment that was included in the target.
Yeah, and I think we provided some adjustments to the Amateur Sports Commission. This was a request that came from the agency as we were putting our bill together. And then on the next four councils, the Black Minnesotans, Chicano Latino, Asian Pacific, and Indian Affairs, we provided $125,000 a year over base funding that went into the base. And then moving down on line 121, we have the Minnesota Historical Society. The first item is the base adjustment, which the House included. And then on line 123, we have an initiative that came from the Historical Society about expanding their education outreach. The Senate provided $150,000 a year, and the House provided $500,000 a year. I believe that was the request from the Historical Society. And then the access to the historic resources, the Senate did not include that in their bill, and the House included the funding that was requested. Moving down on line 125, the Senate provided some additional funding for the Minnesota Forest History Center, and this is one of the historic sites, and that was $50,000 a year that went into the base. And then there was also some additional funding provided to some other museums that are basically fiscal agents. The Historical Society is a passes through these grants, and so $20,000 was added to the Air National Guard Museum over the base. The Hockey Hall of Fame was given $32,000 a year over the base. And then moving down to the Minnesota Military Museum, both the House and the Senate had money in for an archivist position. The Senate provided one-time money of $60,000 a year, whereas the House provided $70,000 in fiscal year 14, and that then went into the base. And then on line 129, both the House and the Senate provided an additional $10,000 a year to bring up the base funding for the Military Museum to $100,000 for fiscal year 14. The next item on line 132 is the Minnesota Arts Board. The House included a base adjustment, and the Senate included an additional $61,000 a year for the Regional Arts Council, bringing the total funding there to $2.2 million a year. And then if we turn over to page 4 of the spreadsheet, we have the Humanities Center on top, and on line 138, both the House and the Senate included the operating budget increase. And the Senate included a $50,000 grant to the Everybody Wins program, which is a children's reading program. The next item on line 142 is the Science Museum. I should point out this was not an entity that was originally in the Senate jurisdiction, but got moved over in the conference committee. And this is funded at the same level as the House that the governor recommended.
On members, on line 146, you'll see a difference in the contingent appropriation. This is an appropriation that's made for to handle unexpected emergencies, small unexpected emergencies like court cases or something. But and the House has a reduction of $117,000 to that appropriation. The Senate maintains the base appropriation, which is $500,000 for the biennium. Moving down to Veterans Affairs, on line 149, again, the difference is the House base adjustment of $151,000. The next difference is that the Senate provided $840,000 for a transfer to the existing support groups account. There is a difference on line 152. of $425,000 for the healthcare IT improvement. The Senate funded this at the requested $5 million. The Senate, or the House, has $4.575 million in for that item. On line 153, both the House and the Senate funded the operational cost for the Southeast Minnesota Veterans Cemetery. On line 154, again, identical funding for the providing permanent funding for the military honor guards. And on line 155, both the House and Senate have $1 million in for expansion of the Minnesota GI Bill. On line 156, here's the next real difference between the House and Senate is the funding for expansion of the County Veterans Service Office grant program. The funding difference is a little bit over $1 million, and there's a difference in the funding per grant level. The House has, for the base grants to counties, the funding is $7,500. For in the Senate position, it's $5,000, and then the House also has higher amounts for the population base grants and the grants to the MACVSO. Following that, on line 157, there are identical positions on funding for the permanent Gold Star program at the governor's request. And then on line 158, there's funding in both bills for the Minnesota Assistance Council Veterans Grant Program to increase the funding, but I believe the Senate funding is one time. Yeah. On line 161, both the House and Senate have the cancellation of the Minnesota Ambulance Association grant. This was a governor's recommendation.
Okay, moving down to line 166, the Department of Military Affairs, the House included a base adjustment, and the Senate included one-time funding in fiscal year 14 for a grant to the Commissioning Committee for the USS Minnesota. And then as we move down to the expenditure changes, as you can see, the difference between the House and Senate, largely the $13.6 million difference has to do with the state auditor, which as we move down to the revenues, we'll see how that nets out and gets us to the $856,000 difference. So as we move down to the revenues, you can see with the state auditor how it's showing up as a loss on the House side to the general fund revenues. And if we turn to the next page, page 5, the first item on the top is on line 183, dealing with the Department of Revenue, and there's a small little revenue increase for some language in the bill requiring electronic payments. And then that pretty much sums up the general fund differences there. And then moving down, there are some items that are special revenue with the state auditor again and with the rewrite of the accounting system. And then the Office of Enterprise Technology, we have the $4 million for the e-government partnership. Both bills have language on line 197 dealing with the auto theft surcharge. And in the tails, there's a small revenue increase. Neither bill includes the license plate. And so then when we move down to the general fund, and you can see the total spending on each side, which we talked about in the difference of $856,000 between the House and the Senate. So I think that concludes the spreadsheet, unless there's any questions.
I should just point out, one thing. On line 207, you'll see this is labeled General Reduction CGIP Reimbursement Allocation, and this is the offsetting reduction to balance out the expenditure earlier in the spreadsheet. And we also will note that there's a formula that doesn't carry forward into the fiscal year 14-15 column, but it doesn't matter because it's carried through to the bottom of the spreadsheet, but we'll fix that for the next version.
I do have a couple questions.
Go ahead. Madam Chair.
Mr. Lundin, did you have a separate target within your target for veterans?
No, we just had one overall target for the committee.
Okay. And we had a separate, we have a target within the committee.
good to know.
And if at some time you could tell me the date that you heard the request for the amateur sports edition, I would appreciate hearing or knowing that date.
Okay. I don't think we actually heard it in committee. I think as the bill was being put together is when the request came to the committee.
Thank you.
Other questions? If not, Ms. James and the counterpart. We're going to work on the side by side.
Yes. Mr. and Madam Chairs, we'll start with Article 2. Article 2 repeals the Sunset Act, and the working language in Article 2 is really on page R3 of Article 2. On the Senate side, it is Section 9, and on the House side, it is Section 7, the repealer, repealing Chapter 3D. The rest of Article 2 is housekeeping related to repealing the Sunset Act, removing cross-references, removing reporting requirements that were sprinkled here and there in the statutes to the Sunset Commission. There were two provisions that were included in the Senate bill that are not in the House bill. Those appear on beginning on page R2, Section 6, and then on page R3, Section 7. These two provisions related to a report that needed to two different reports, both of which should have already been delivered, and so it may not be necessary to repeal or to make these modifications in these two sections of statute. But for cleanliness, the Senate included those changes.
Mr. Chair, then we'll move on to Article 3. And in your binders, I think all of these articles are separately stapled. So Article 3 is the State Government Operations Article. And the first set of provisions is House-only provisions. And the first four sections each come from the LCC housekeeping bill. There was a Senate bill that hasn't passed the full Senate yet, but it's Senate File 1190. And the provisions in the House bill are identical to what are in the Senate bill. So that goes through page R1, A3, and R2. Then continuing on the House side, Section 5 on R2 is a legislative audit provision. This was in another Senate bill, Senate File 870. There was some discussion with Mr. Nobles, the legislative auditor, and MMB about working out a procedure for auditing certain of the state's financial records, and I think that might have come to the House a little later than the Senate. And so this is a little bit different than the Senate language, but it reflects what I understand is the agreement between Mr. Nobles and MMB on this issue. Section 6, data security audits by the legislative auditor as resources permit is identical to a section in Senate File 870. Section 7 on R3, the obligation to notify the legislative auditor, is identical to a provision in Senate File 870, which I don't believe has passed the full Senate yet, but it's passed through one or more committees. And continuing on R3, there's identical provisions on authority of the Secretary of State to accept funds to enhance the state's election system. And then on the top of R4, authority to accept funds for the address confidentiality program, there's a technical difference in just some grammar in those, but that I think can be worked out. It's not a substantive difference.
Go ahead, finish those.
The next one on page R4 is the city and town accounting system software. The policy here is identical on both sides. As Mr. Lundin noted earlier, the Senate tightened up a little bit of the language, but I don't think there's a, I don't think you'll find a substantive difference here between the two positions. The next provisions on page R5 are what Ms. Roberts and Mr. Lundeen referred to earlier. These are the statutory changes that create the State Auditor Enterprise Fund and would direct deposit of our audit fees into that fund and appropriate them back out. So that, as the fiscal staff indicated, that is a policy difference, and that's reflected on R5 and on R6 and R and all of R6 on the House side, and the top of page R7 on the House side. That's all the same issue, basically.
And then on the Senate side, on page R7, is a provision that came from the Department of Administration. This changes when certain information about bids and proposals becomes public in the bidding process for state contracts. And then on page 8, we go back to House-only provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, on the House side of page R8, section 17 is part of the LCC housekeeping bill, so it's similar or the same as a section in the Senate counterpart bill, Senate file 1190. Section 18 is a House-only provision that is not in any Senate bill. This is a provision that is a continuing appropriation provision. It states that if a major appropriation bill is not enacted by July 1st of an odd-numbered year, that the base appropriations in that bill would continue for a year. And then the rest of the language on page R9 specifies some detail about how you know what the base is and some exceptions to that principle. And Mr. Chair, that takes us over to page R10. The House, there's a House-only provision, which I don't believe has any Senate counterpart, that requires executive branch agencies that receive federal funds to notify budget committees if the agency believes there's a potential for a significant reduction in those funds.
Due to the sequester or other such.
On the Senate side of page R10 is a provision, this came from the administration. This narrows the definition of a resident vendor for purposes of granting a preference for state contracts for goods and services. And then on page R13, at the very end of page R10 is section 6, and that also changes the timing for when certain data is made public in a solicitation process. On page R11, section 7 on the Senate side is also an administration provision, and this exempts service contracts under $5,000 from the requirement that the commissioner first make certain determinations, and one of those determinations is that there's no current state employee that's able and available to perform the services. And then on page R12 on the Senate side, section 8, this is a Department of Administration provision. This exempts the acquisition of goods and services up to $5,000 from the formal solicitation process. Current law exempts contracts up to $2,500, so this just adds contracts from $2,500 to $5,000 to that exemption. Section 9 is a provision from the Office of Enterprise Technology, and it exempts agencies from a requirement to include non-visual technology access standards in state contracts for procurement of information technology. On page R13, on the Senate side, section 10, this is also a Department of Administration provision. This eliminates the requirement that notices of RFQs and RFPs for design-build contracts be published in the State Register. On page R14 is section 11 on the Senate side. This is a Department of Administration provision. It eliminates a requirement that notices of requests for qualifications, RFQs, and RFPs for construction manager at risk contracts be published in the State Register. And then on page R15, section 12 and is similar to section 21 on the House side. It's not quite identical, but similar. This provides for the transfer of funds when OET contracts with an agency to provide services. Section 13 on page R15 is an Office of Enterprise Technology provision. It allows OET to charge a service fee for users of the North Star system. The fee is capped at $2. The exact amount of the fee is to be determined with advice from an e-government advisory council that's set up in the next section of the bill. The fee will not be charged for merely viewing or inspecting data. It puts the money from the fee into a special account and appropriates that money to OET. And then on page R16, section 14 is that advisory council that will help set the fee. Then on page R17, on the Senate side is section 15. It's the same as the House section 22, and it moves auditing duties from the state auditor to the legislative auditor for the Dairy Council.
And Mr. Chair, that moving back to the House side on R17, section 23 is the provision that Ms. Robertson and Mr. Lundeen mentioned earlier. No, this is different. Excuse me. This was an amendment added as a floor amendment in the House that requires legislators to pay 10% of the premium for individual coverage in CGIP and 15% for dependent coverage, or if there's a higher amount specified in state compensation plans, then legislators would have to pay that higher amount. Mr. Chair, the next several sections on the House side beginning...
Mr. Shepard, I'm sorry for interrupting, but Ms. Dan, where is that Dairy Council thing?
That is on page R17. It's section 15 on the Senate side and section 22 on the House side. The word Dairy Council doesn't appear there, but it's in the 32C. Section 32C is the Dairy Council.
And what is that?
What is the Dairy Council?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, it's a Dairy Research Council, and I don't think we heard this in the House committee, but we didn't hear the substance of what the Dairy Research Council was. We just heard that the legislative auditor, rather than the state auditor, had agreed that they would the proper entity to audit it.
I remember. Can someone tell me?
I can look it up.
What the Dairy Council is?
I'll tell you in a minute. What books are for? Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, the Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Authority is established, and it enters into management contracts with a nonprofit corporation to design, develop, and operate a facility to further various purposes related to dairy production. There's a list in the statute of some of the duties there. I'm obviously struggling because I don't know much more about it.
And no one, and that's from admin or?
Representative Murphy, that provision comes from the state auditor's office.
State auditor's office. Okay. All right. I got it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the next set of provisions on the House side, beginning at the bottom of page R17, was brought to the House committee by the AMPERS, public radio stations, and it makes a number of changes in the laws that govern who's eligible to receive grants. It basically refers more specifically to which federal regulations are involved. That's on page R18. On page R19, among other things, requires the station to be licensed to a community in the state of Minnesota and must be operated as a non-commercial educational station. There's at the middle of page R19, there's a current requirement that stations, to be eligible, have to broadcast 365 days a year, and this creates an exception if there's a power outage or a natural disaster. And then R20, it provides that if the station is not receiving funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It specifies when an independent audit is required. Section 26 on the House side allows the Commissioner of Administration to, when state funds are distributed to public television or non-commercial radio stations and used to purchase equipment, under the current law, if they sell the equipment, they have to pay the net asset, the net amounts received back to the state. This provision would allow the Commissioner of Administration to approve the use of those funds to buy similar equipment. It would be up to the discretion of the Commissioner. Section 27 on R20 is a different topic. This is from the LCC housekeeping bill. It strikes the authority of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission to subpoena witnesses and records.
Mr. Chair, at the bottom of page R20, section 16 on the Senate side is similar but not quite identical to section 28 on the House side. This provision, like the Dairy Council provision, moves auditing duties from the state auditor to the legislative auditor.
And the next section, Mr. Chair, section 29 on page R21 on the House side relates to the creation of the state enterprise, the state auditor enterprise fund. This is just a change in cross-reference.
Mr. Chair and members, then on R21 on the bottom of the left of the Senate side, section 17 is a revisor's instruction, and this changes the name of the Office of Enterprise Technology to the Office of Minute Services.
And I'd point out that since this side-by-side was produced, the identical language passed the House in House File 1389. So that had not yet happened when we published the side-by-side. On the bottom of page R21 is from the LCC housekeeping bill, clarifying that the chair of the Legislative Advisory Commission would be a senator this year. Section 31 on the bottom of R21 and continuing to R22 is part of the discussions and agreement reached by Mr. Nobles and the Commissioner of Management and Budget, under which the legislative auditor is required to examine alternatives for achieving an annual independent audit of the financial statements of the state of Minnesota. Section 32 on R22 is the one that Ms. Roberts and Mr. Lundeen referred to earlier. This is the state employees who were denied CGIP coverage in the back half of 2012 because they didn't file the right documents. This would require the commissioner to pay these people for other insurance that they bought if they can show that they would have been covered if they had provided the right documents. The repealers are on the bottom of page R22. The first two are part of the LCC housekeeping bill, and they're also in Senate File 1190, the companion. The last one, the repeal of 6.58, is related to the State Auditor Enterprise Fund issue.
Mr. Chair and members, then moving to Article 5, this is the military and veterans provisions. On page R1, Section 1 on the Senate side is the same as Section 1 on the House side. And this allows state and municipal employees to choose when during calendar year to take their 15-day military leave. And then Section 2 on the Senate side, Sections 2 through 6 and 10 relate to the County Veteran Service Officer Program. They're almost the same, but we have a couple of differences between the Senate and the House side. One of those differences is that in Section 2 on the Senate side, we've added a definition of commissioner so that it's the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs because this section was lacking that definition. On page R2, Section 3 of the Senate side is the same as Section 2 of the House side. It changes provisions that determine when a county is eligible to receive grants based on the certification of their service officer. Section 4 on the Senate side is the same as Section 3 on the House side. And Section 5 is the same of the Senate side is the same as Section 4 of the House side. These are conforming changes, and you'll see that on the Senate side, lines 57.5 and 57.6 deletes an authorization to use unexpended funding for training, but that is moved to upward to line 56.32 and 56.33 on the Senate side. Section 6 on the Senate side and Section 5 on the House side are similarly structured, but the amounts are different. They're structured to give a base grant amount to all counties and then to also have a population-based additional grant. And then on line, beginning at line 57.30 of the Senate side matches the House side beginning at lines 21.26. It matches, but the amount is not the same, but the language is the same, giving a grant to the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. On page R3 on the Senate side, Section 7 matches Section 6 of the House side. This is the expansion of the GI Bill, expanding the benefits to all veterans and not just those who had served since 9/11. On page R5, Section 8 of the Senate side matches Section 7 of the House side. This section exempts payments that are made under the Veterans Retraining Assistance Program from reductions to the benefits that are available under the GI Bill. On page R6, on the Senate side, we have Section 9 that establishes a veterans home in Beltrami County, and this is not on the House side.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, sections on the House side, sections 8, 9, and 10 are House-only provisions. Section 8, dealing with evidence of rehabilitation, amends a current law that allows a person who has committed a serious crime before entering the military to subsequently use the honorable discharge that he obtains in the military as competent evidence of sufficient rehabilitation for certain state and local public jobs and licensure. Assuming, of course, that the state or local authority wants to hire that veteran. Any future, it also provides that any future crime by that veteran cancels that benefit. Section 9 is a very small provision dealing with veteran-owned small business contracts, and it authorizes local governments, municipalities actually, and townships to provide a bid preference program to veteran-owned small businesses when they are bidding for contracts for goods and services being purchased by that township. A year ago, the legislature authorized counties to have a similar non-mandatory authorization, optional program. And some years ago, the legislature directed that state agencies are mandated to provide that bid preference program to veteran-owned small businesses. Section 10 on the House side deals with the Peace Officer Reciprocity Exam. Under current law, a soldier who is currently serving in the military is not eligible to take that exam. This law would remove that constraint. This bill would remove that constraint and allow the soldier to take the exam, but the soldier may not actually be licensed if he passes the exam. He or she may not actually be licensed until receiving that honorable discharge. And the repealer is the same on both sides.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, the repealer changes the county, well, the section that's repealed places the counties on a three-year rotation cycle, with some of the counties getting the county veteran service officer grants each year. And so part of the changes here are to place the counties on an annual cycle so that all the counties get a grant every year. Moving on to Article 6. On page R1, section 1 on the Senate side is the same as section 20 on the House side. Well, I'll say just as an overview for Article 6 that we're doing three things in Article 6. One is that we're moving the auto theft recovery program that's currently in the public safety statutes into the Department of Revenue. We are also requiring that a host of tax payments be made electronically once the taxpayer has reached a certain threshold for a given year. Under current law, a taxpayer, if they reach that threshold in 1 year, only has to file electronically that year and the next year. And the changes throughout this, throughout Article 6 change this so that once the taxpayer reaches that threshold in 1 year, they forever after will be paying, submitting their taxes electronically. And then the third general thing that's going on in Article 6 is a couple of housekeeping provisions to deal with a lease that was paid off early. So going section by section, this first section, section 1 on page R1, that's the same as section 20 on the House side, is a provision dealing with that early payoff of the lease. And that goes all the way until the bottom of page R2. And the provision there, the section 2 on the Senate side is the same as section 1 on the House side. And that is dealing with, it's also about the auto theft prevention program. Section, page R4, section 3 is the same as the House section 2 on page R4, and this requires electronic submission of wage levy disclosure forms. On page R6, section 4 on the Senate side is the same as section 3 on the House side, and this deals with electronic submission of withheld wages. And on page R7, section 5 on the Senate side is the same as section 4 on the House side. This is electronic submission of sales and use tax. Page R9, section 6 is the same as the House side, section 5. That deals with the submission of corporate taxes. Section 7 on the Senate side is the same as section 6 on the House side. That's healthcare provider taxes, electronic submissions. Page R10, section 8 on the Senate side and section is the same as section 7 on the House side, and that deals with cigarette and tobacco tax electronic payments. Section 9 on the Senate side is the same as section 8 on the House side. That deals with a tax for brewers, electronic submission once again. Section 10 on the Senate side is the same as Section 9 on the House side, and that's dealing with the auto theft prevention program. It looks like all new language, but as I mentioned, it is being moved here into the Department of Revenue section from the from public safety chapters. Section 11 on the Senate side on page R11 is the same as Section 10 on the House side, and this is again more of the automobile theft prevention program being moved. Section 12 on the Senate side is the same as Section 11 on the House side. That deals with electronic remittance of insurance taxes. Section 13 on the Senate side is the same as Section 12 on the House side. That's electronic submission of landfill taxes. And the repealer has two paragraphs. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll let Mr. Shepherd discuss Section 13 on the House side.
Mr. Chair and members, the House-only provision on Section 13 requires the Commissioner of Revenue to report on potential data practices issues relating to use of debit cards as payment for tax refunds.
And then on page R12, the repealer is the same, section 14 on both the House and the Senate side. The first paragraph deals with the auto theft surcharge. It's being repealed in the public safety chapter. And the second paragraph deals with that lease appropriation. It was an appropriation for that lease that has been paid off, so it is no longer necessary. And finally, Article 7 is the Compensation Council provisions. Section 1.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Madam can
Chair.
You tell me how you got the Compensation Council report?
Well, the Compensation Council report, I think, was issued by the Compensation Council, and we got it, and then some representatives of the Compensation Council came and presented it to us.
Did your committee receive it?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, the Compensation Council provisions were contained in Senate File 1534, carried by Senator Pappas. Section 1 sets the salaries of the legislators at 33% of the salary that's authorized for the governor. This is effective January 5th of 2015. Section 2 on the Senate side on page R1 permits the governor to set salaries of agency heads anywhere within a range that's approved by the legislature. Other appointing authorities are still required to seek interim approval of the Legislative Coordinating Commission and ratification by the legislature for setting the salaries of agency heads. Page R2, Section 3 on the Senate side is an annual CPI adjustment to the governor's salary. This was not in the Compensation Council's recommendations or bill, but was added in the Finance Division for State Departments.
And Ms. James, we're going to find that's one of two, I think, in this that were added by the other one being the legislature cannot participate in the Compensation Council.
Mr. Chair, that's right. Those are two differences. And then on page R2, section 4, it's a conforming amendment that has to do with permitting the governor to set salaries within the range. We'll see another one of those as well. Page R3, at the very bottom of R2, section 5, this is setting the salaries, the cap for a certain agency heads at 133% of the governor's salary instead of its current 95%. Then at the bottom of page R3, section 6,
Chairman Murphy.
If we could slow down just a little bit, because this isn't familiar to us at all.
Okay. Representative Murphy, I will slow down.
Thank you.
At the bottom...
Because we have to hear this.
I'll repeat, at the bottom of page R2, that's section 5. In current law, several of the listed agency heads here, their salaries are capped at 95% of the governor's salary. But the change here is to raise that cap to 133% of the governor's salary.
So, again, this particular group of employees goes from 95% to 133. Okay.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's right. At the bottom of page R3 is the beginning of section 6. It goes on to the next page, and this does a similar thing. It raises the cap for the listed employees. Currently, they are capped at 85% up to 120% of the governor's salary. On page R4, section 7, this allows the governor to set salaries for the governor's appointees and then requires the governor to follow a certain protocol. Several of these changes have to do with splitting the governor off from other appointing authorities, leaving the process for other appointing authorities setting agency head salaries, leaving that in place, but then giving the governor some latitude to set salary ranges for his appointees. And so this is one of the provisions that is implicated to do that section, and that was part of the Compensation Council's recommendations. Then...
So the 90 going to 133... And the 120%, that was a recommendation of the council.
Representative Murphy and members, yes, that's right. That was part of the recommendations.
Chair Murphy, there's two groups that recommendation was made to.
Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, the next section, Section 14 on the House side, is a House-only provision.
Mr. Chair, I'll explain the three House provisions together because they're all related. These are all technical. These were part of the LCC housekeeping bill, so they don't really have anything to do with increasing salaries. But what they do is provide that under the current law, the Compensation Council is appointed in the fall of the even-numbered year before the election. And so if you have a turnover in majority like you did this year, then you have people on the council that were appointed by the prior majority. And then when the new legislature comes into session, that's not the group that's in the majority that has to act on these recommendations. And so this changes the appointment date. So the appointment date and the creation of the council would be in January. It just syncs up with the legislative session a little bit better. And then on page R6, under the current law, the council is to report by May 1st, and that seems to be too late to really get into any legislative consideration, so their deadline is moved up to March 15th. And that summarizes all of the House provisions in this article.
And on page R6, the Senate side is amending the same section of statute as the House is, so they're lined up next to each other on the side-by-side. But we are doing something different. We are removing legislators from the Compensation Council. Then at the bottom of page R6 and going on and onto page R7, section 9 of the Senate side allows employee salary to exceed agency head salaries. Section 10 on the Senate side allows the commissioner to set a salary within a range for unusual employment situations rather than having the cap. Section 11 on page R8 establishes a compensation study for managerial positions. Section 12 increases the governor's salary by 3% in 2015 and 3% in 2016. With the salaries of other constitutional officers being adjusted to retain their proportional relationship to the governor at the same proportion as it was on January 1st, 2013. Section 13 is a repealer. The section that's being repealed was an exemption for the cap for employees to not exceed the agency head. So since that cap is removed, the exemption is no longer necessary. Section 14 is the effective dates for everything in Article 7. As I mentioned earlier, the effective date for the legislator increases is January 5th, 2015. Most of the rest of the sections are effective the day following enactment, but the agency head salary increases are effective retroactively to January 1st, 2013. And then the section that sets the governor's salary, gives them the CPI adjustments to the governor's salary, starts in 2017 because Section 3 already set the governor's salary for 2014 or 15 and 16.
Question. So that is it for the side-by-sides. Any questions on either the change items or the side-by-sides? Is there any additional information that would be helpful here?
This went to somebody else.
Okay, I guess that this particular point, Chairman Murphy.
Representative Nelson, King.
Welcome, Representative Nelson. Would you like to introduce yourself and to the rest of the crowd? We're glad you're here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry I was late. I was presenting a bill in Ways and Means, and a little bit longer and drawn out than I cared for, but we got to pass through Ways and Means. I'm Representative Michael Nelson. I represent House District 48 in the southern half of Brooklyn Park. My senator is Senator Eaton, and this is my sixth term in the legislature.
Good. Well, it's good to see you. We've spent about the last hour and 20 minutes going over the side-by-sides. I really don't have anything else planned for this evening. Chairman Murphy, what would be your plan going on from here, since you're in charge? You'll have a gavel at the next meeting of the committee.
Is that tomorrow?
Why?
We have a long day tomorrow,
yeah.
And I have a bill up.
Well, Chair Murphy,
I would
guess that the Senate side of the conference committee would probably concur with you that we've got plenty to do tomorrow, and maybe next week would be better if that fits with your thinking.
That would fit much better with my comfort. Although I haven't thought a whole lot about it,
yeah.
But Monday.
Yep, that'd be great.
Because that fits with the rules, and that's when I would be next.
Yeah.
For the chair.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But I don't know what. We have not been given any kind of a schedule for next week yet, so we don't know what bills are up or what time of day. It would probably be in the evening again.
Well, why don't you adjourn the meeting to the call of Chairman Murphy? Meeting's adjourned at the call of the Chairman Murphy. Thank you.